Psalm 83, again, we have here a spiritual song, such as the Apostle Paul mentions in Ephesians 5:19 and Colossians 3:16, and a psalm also mentioned by him in those verses. And it is a psalm of Asaph. We've had a long string of these. This is the last in this series. God had Asaph to write, "Do not keep silence, O God. Do not hold your peace and do not be still, O God. For behold, your enemies make a tumult, and those who hate you have lifted up their head. They have taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted together against your sheltered ones. They have said, 'Come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be remembered no more.' For they have consulted together with one consent. They form a confederacy against you, the tents of Edom and the Ishmaelites, Moab and the Hagrites, Gebal, Ammon, and Amalek, Philistia with the inhabitants of Tyre. Assyria also has joined with them. They have helped the children of Lot, Selah. Deal with them as with Midian, as with Sisera, as with Jabin at the brook Kishon, who perished at Ein Dor, who became as refuse on the earth. Make their nobles like Oreb and like Zeeb, yes, all their princes like Zeba and Zalmunna, who said, 'Let us take for ourselves the pastures of God for possession.' O my God, make them like the whirling dust, like the chaff before the wind. As the fire burns the woods, and as the flame sets the mountains on fire, so pursue them with your tempest and frighten them with your storm. Fill their faces with shame, that they may seek your name, O Jehovah. Let them be confounded and dismayed forever. Yes, let them be put to shame and perish, that they may know that you, whose name alone is Jehovah, are the Most High over all the earth." When did Asaph write this? The safest we can say is during his lifetime. And what was the occasion? Well, as I went through a couple or three commentaries on this, no one knows for sure. Once again, it's not all that important, because although sometimes we do know the occasions of psalms, and this gives us some insight into understanding them properly, when God does not give us the context, he doesn't give us the circumstances of the writing, then it's obvious that for life and godliness, we don't need to know these. What we do see here is that which characterizes the hatred of those who do not know Jesus Christ. The hatred of individuals, but more strongly, the hatred of societies and nations who are in rebellion against God, against his Christ, against his mediatorial king, whom he has set upon his holy hill, as we read about in Psalm 2. These who hate God, these whose hearts are at enmity against him, as Paul mentions in 2 Corinthians, that's not merely an Old Testament concept. It is both old and new. These who hate God hate his people and seek to destroy them. And that's what we have going on even as we begin this psalm. Do not keep silent, O God. Do not hold your peace and do not be still, O God. There had been no obvious help. And the saints of God often have that going on, that when they need help, they don't see it immediately. God has told us, friends, that we do not have to have him answering when we call, but we may be calling upon him. And certainly he will end his silence. He will end his apparent inaction at the exact time when needed. For he does not abandon his people. He does not abandon any of his children, not a single one, nor does he abandon them collectively as the covenant community. Asaph is crying out in the place of, or for the sake of, the people of God because of what's going on. The enemies of God, the enemies of God's people, have all bound themselves together. They're in crafty counsel. And again, this sounds like Psalm 2. They want to destroy the people of God. And it's quite a group here. From the south, we have the people of, from the east, we have Edom and the Ishmaelites. These are people related physically to Israel. Nonetheless, from the days of their forefathers, they have been in anger and in hatred against Israel. Edom was that nation that came from Esau. The Ishmaelites, why, they're Arabs today, but they are ones who have been the children of Ishmael, who was set aside for Isaac. Moab and the Hagarites are also to the east. Gebal, Ammon, and Amalek are people more to the south. So we have to the east and to the south. To the west are the Philistines and the Tyrians, the Phoenicians. And then from the north come down the Assyrians. So from every corner, starting as people normally did in those days, we start at the north, but they started at the east. And this is why you talk about orienting a map, for example. We don't talk about it borealizing a map. We orient a map. We set it to the east, or at least people used to. So it is here that we go east, south, west, north. From every direction, they're coming in to attempt to destroy the people of God, and it naturally would be a scary situation, one that the godly cannot withstand by themselves. And so here is a point where we stop and we consider right here between verses 8 and 9. Now, as we stop and consider, we think back to God's faithfulness in the past, that which Israel knew about. And so in verses 9 through 12, we look back to events in the book of Judges, where God, dealing with an unfaithful people, in grace was faithful to them. He allowed hardship. He allowed difficulty. He allowed conquest against them to a point in order to discipline and in order to drive them closer, returning them to himself. And so we look here at Midian with Sisera and Jabin. We see Oreb and Zeeb, Zeba and Zalmunna. They also thought that they would take the land of God. And God destroyed them all through judges whom he sent. Through Deborah, for example. And through Gideon. These ones were used by him to destroy the enemy, even though the enemy looked overwhelming, and naturally speaking should have been. God delivered his people. The same God who will yet deliver his people. Well, on the basis of looking at what God has done in the past and knowing of his unchanging, gracious nature to his people, Asaph is then led by the Spirit to pray that God would now do the same, with some vivid weather imagery here, well, natural imagery. Make them like whirling dust, or make them like the chaff before the wind. You know, yesterday and the day before were terribly windy days. And if you had been, let's say, harvesting wheat, were this in, let's say, June instead of February, and you were doing it the old-fashioned way, having a binder go through the field, and then taking it to a thrashing machine. You'd maybe have, after running it through the thrasher, this huge pile of straw with some of the chaff in it. And it would be taller than a man. It would be 20, 30 feet tall. It would look imposing, like a little hill, like a little mountain. But before the winds we had yesterday, how well would it do? It'd be blown all over the place. It couldn't withstand the wind. We have a mighty heap of enemies. God, let them be like the chaff before the wind. Let them be like a big pile of dust that just gets whipped around, blown all over the place. And some of us that find history interesting would be thinking maybe about the dirty 30s out in the high plains of our country 80 years ago, or the filthy 50s within the lifetime of some of us. Let them be pushed and wiped out like a fire burning the woods and a flame that sets the mountain on fire. We've seen pictures, we've seen videos of these things with terrible fires out to the western part of our country. And maybe some of you have read the stories of Laura Ingalls Wilder about prairie fires and how they advance so swiftly and leave nothing behind them. In just this way, pursue them with your tempest and frighten them with your storm, God. Fill their faces with shame in order that they may seek your name. Here is what is eventually going to happen to all nations and to all peoples. They will eventually yield to the person, to the office, to the claims of God's mediatorial King, the Lord Jesus Christ. They'll be confounded and dismayed in their ungodliness, but he will bring them to know himself. He will bring them to know Jehovah, the covenant God who abides the same forever. I'm not exactly sure, once again, why the translators here speak of your name, the Lord. Even in the Old King James, here in the last verse, it says Jehovah. But in any case, we should be seeing it as that. The covenant name, the name of the God who is forever abiding in his goodness to his own. He is the one who delivers us through the power of his mediatorial King, the Lord Jesus Christ, from every foe and every combination of foes. We can now sing this, trusting that in our difficulty, he will arise, give us deliverance, give us blessing, turn the enemy away from us and away from sin and to himself in his good time. We're going to sing Psalm 83 using the version that has the fullness of it, version C here, Psalm 83C.